For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Second and 12. Comes a blitz with Wagner. Pass is a floater. And it is a completion.
This is incredible. What a throw. Free rusher. Swift decides not to block.
Moore shaken up.
We're back with more Anthony Herron and Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
So it sounded on CBS. Game got flexed to the national window. Frankly, wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game for the national audience for much of it. But man, did the drama deliver in the fourth quarter. Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders end up taking down Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears. You know the final score was 18-15, even though it looked like it was going to be 15-12 until the Hail Mary heard round the sports universe. There's one man who has been very, very consistent in his thoughts on comparing the two quarterbacks who were at the top of the marquee in that CBS window. So there's nobody better to join us on this evening. Anthony Herron and Hub Arkish on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Let's go out to the Circus Sports Hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. My guy Sean King is going to join us right now. You can find him on social at Real Sean King. Sean, what's going on? How you doing this evening?
The pride of Bolingbrook, Illinois, man. It's been too long, my brother. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us, man. You've talked about these two QBs, and you talk about a variety of the guys coming through the draft cycle every year, but we finally got to see them on the field together. And from a Jaden Daniels perspective, it wasn't the most precise game he's played, but you've played through so much as a quarterback in your own right, between the ribs he was dealing with, the Bears defense that's amongst the best in football. What stood out to you about the two QBs?
Oh, well, I think Jaden Daniels is in, and it's going to sound maybe strange to some of the Bear fan base, because I said before the year that Caleb would struggle early. I was like, his vision of successful quarterback play is not the consistent way to win games in the NFL. And I said he struggled early, not because he's not talented, but because he's going to have to make adjustments mentally and physically to how he approaches the quarterback position, and that he'd improve as the season goes on. Looks like I was correct. With Jaden, to me, Jaden's a better athlete, taller than Caleb, same arm talent. What he's now trying to figure out, Ant, is when to use that athleticism and how. Because he came out like a wrecking ball, running all over people, throwing all over people. And then he realized that, man, these guys are a little bit faster than the SEC. They're a little bit stronger. These hits hurt a little bit longer. So now you see him trying to make some adjustments.
You know, Sean, the first thing I wanted to ask you tonight, because, you know, you obviously know about this, and quite frankly, most of our listeners don't, because they've never been in a backfield in the NFL on a Hail Mary play. And I know you've been throwing, not in the backfield, but nonetheless, explain to our listeners, if you can, it's a jump ball. It's 6, 7, 8 guys all running into each other. There's probably 4 pass interference calls that could be made on every one of them. It's just luck, when all is said and done, and there's only so much you can do to make it any more than that, isn't there?
I don't agree with that. I think you're good at what you practice. I think it'll be emphasized more. I'd be interested to hear what Ant thinks about this, because a couple of teams have lost games on it. I'll just be honest. A lot of times you're just going through the motions on Hail Mary defense, because in practice it's never really a live rep. They never really jump because they don't want to get somebody injured. So I think teams are going to emphasize it more, because there is a skill and the efficiency that goes to defending a Hail Mary pass.
And when you get to that point in practice, usually it's going to be either on Thursday, more often on a Friday. Everybody starts yelling, Big Ben, Big Ben. And then that time comes. The offense gets their chance at it. Everybody stays out of the way. You don't want to turn an ankle. You don't want to pop an Achilles. Then the defense gets their crack at it. Everybody yells, knock it down. And you knock it down. The ball hits the turf. But, yes, it is something that's really difficult to practice full speed. And your old college play caller, Sean, Rich Rodriguez, he used to always tell me there was not a guy who threw a better deep ball than Sean King. So when you've been in those scenarios as a quarterback, what is the art to it as a QB? We saw Jaden Daniels have over 12 seconds in the backfield to get himself set to heave it about 65 yards down the field. What is the mindset? What exactly are you trying to accomplish mechanically as a QB to pull that off?
Well, here's what's interesting. I've been very fortunate to coach some really good quarterbacks. And when we get to specifically how do you approach a Hail Mary, the first thing I have to tell them is realize where you're at on the field. If you throw this ball out of bounds, whether it be out the end zone or on the sideline, we have no shot to catch it. And you've seen that happen. Like a guy throws a damn ball in the front row of the stand. So that's the first thing. Don't take anything for granted. It's a high-intensity, high-pressure situation. Don't throw it out of bounds. The second thing I tell them is try and throw it to our best player. So who's ever our best player that's running down on our Hail Mary, who's in that personnel group, who's in that scheme, try and throw the ball to them. You're going to throw it with air and get it in the end zone, but try and throw it to that particular person and let them be the initial top of the jump. Let them be the one to go up and get strong hands. You saw it in Virginia Tech, Miami. I know ultimately I think they called the guy out of bounds, but it was their best player. That's the way I coach Hail Mary.
So, Sean, I hopefully everybody gets over this, but at this point it's still painful. And I'm curious, with all the locker rooms and teams you've been with, what would your recommendation be to Matt Eberflus as to how to handle his players now? How does he turn the corner from this? Because this could have a 10-week down, or they could bounce right back next week. But how do you think the coach has to approach it to get his guys back on schedule?
Well, for one, you're professional, so no one game should mean more than the one before or the one that's coming up after. You know, the teams that win, like the Kansas City Chiefs, they're not so high for the opener against the Ravens that they're flat the next week. Like they approach it as, okay, this is our job. But it takes a mature team. The Bears have a young team. I think what they're learning is, just like Will Levis can gift you a game in week one, you can let one fall through your fingers against the Commanders. Now, if I was Eberflus, the number one thing I would do is put the damn schedule up. Because for all the success that it feels like we've had now, man, these remaining games are what? All division games plus what? The Seahawks and the Niners, I think. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I think that's pretty accurate.
Pretty close, yeah.
So, I mean, that enough. We don't want what looks like it should be season that built upon 7 wins last year to turn into the same record. And when you look at how tough the division is, that could very easily happen if the concentration level isn't what it needs to be.
Sean King is our guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And Sean, you've been a quarterback who's led teams to deep playoff runs. You've been a part of Super Bowl championship winning squads. And right now the Bears find themselves in what seems to be a really intriguing position where, coming off of this defeat, some of the leadership from the Bears, whether it's tight end Cole Kmet, one of the best defensive backs in football, Jalen Johnson, linebacker T.J. Edwards leads them in tackles every year here lately. There's been some of the Bears' leadership from a player perspective who've essentially said things in the public sector here on this radio station and other platforms, basically questioning some things that were done schematically, how they should have handled the second-to-last play, what should maybe be done with Tyreek Stevenson, how practice has gone here recently. They've done it in a really respectful way, but it is unique that players are willing here. It's not unique to this week. We've heard it a few times from some of the Bears players this season, willing to say publicly, essentially question how things are being handled. You've been in so many locker rooms, and Matt Eberflus seems to be a guy with maybe a similar personality to your old coach, Tony Dungy. Tony seemed like he was a guy who was maybe a player's coach, very approachable, not a yeller, screamer, cursor kind of guy. Have you been around a locker room that seems to have a big outward voice like this Bears locker room seems to have?
Not one that hasn't won anything yet. And I think that's where they have to be careful. Like, the one thing with Tony was, no matter what the public perception of Tony was, he was extremely firm and direct. He didn't do it by elevating his volume or using ill-gotten words, but he was very firm. He was, hey, listen, we're going to hit play, and you're going to be evaluated on what we see, right? Like, what's our goal? Our goal is to get into the playoffs, right? How do we get into the playoffs? Okay, historically, this is what it's taken to get into the playoffs. Like, that's how we approached it. And I just think, like, the Cole Kmets, and I think you said Johnson, those guys have to be careful, because you have to have been to the mountaintop to give advice on how to get to the mountaintop, or what the proper way to pursue getting to the mountaintop is, right? So a lot of these guys are going through some of these things for the first time. And as an athlete, man, that's an emotional game. And you're getting a lot of microphones put in your face for the first time. And, you know, a lot of people are saying the Bears have a good defense. I don't know if the 2024 Bears defense is really good. I think it's improved from last year, but they still got, what, 8 games left, 9 games left, where they could go out and get blitzkrieg and end up a bottom half of the NFL defense. So if I'm Eberflus, that's my narrative. Like, guys, we haven't written the book yet for this year. We're still early, chapter, what, 7? We got 17. We got 10 more chapters to put. And I think that's how they got to look at it. Don't get consumed by success or failure. What I call it is bulletproof emotions. You have to have bulletproof emotions to be successful in that league.
Sean, the biggest story in Chicago is still Caleb Williams, even after last weekend. I'm curious, what is your evaluation of what you've seen the first 7 weeks? It obviously started slow. He had a really hot streak for 3 weeks than we had last week. What's your overall evaluation of what you've seen so far?
I mean, he's getting better. I think he's learning to trust the system more than he ever has. He's not naturally a system quarterback. He's a guy, if you look at his high school tape, if you look at him at Oklahoma, if you look at him at USC, even a large part of this year with the Bears, a lot of his explosive plays come from ad-libs, extending the play, you know, kind of not taking the gimme throw that's there to create a bigger throw down the field. So he's figuring out what works and what doesn't work. Now, the sad part of this, if he gets it wrong too many times, Eberflus ain't going to be there when he figures it out. So he has to be careful. The interesting thing, and I want to get you guys' opinion. I know I'm the guest, but I'm not boots on the ground in Chicago. At times, it doesn't necessarily look like Caleb has a great relationship with all of the skill guys. Like, he'll throw a ball on the ground and DJ Moore fashion. You know, he'll hit you with that 1-2 and walk to the sideline. You know, a doomsday will go a quarter and not get a target, and you can see him standing on. You know, how is the relationship with Caleb and those guys? Like, not what they say, but how is it truly?
I think it's a fair question, because a lot of what ends up going out there is clips. And DJ Moore, to one of the examples of the players you mentioned there, his personality is super understated on a regular basis, and there have been some moments where it seems like, you know, clips where DJ maybe looks a little bit frustrated with his young quarterback. They seemingly have gotten on the same page more in recent games. Part of it, they've played some worse defenses and the Bears got rolling. Keenan Allen in that London game had a couple of touchdown grabs, some nice third down grabs. He and Roma Dunes, they are 100%. They are in simpatico. You know, they're in the same draft class, same age. So they're on the same page, no doubt. There are a couple of the vets that maybe have shown a little bit of frustration at times with their rookie quarterback. But neither personality seems like, you know, the type that's going to let it go too far, because the expectations are there for the team as a whole. That's kind of my evaluation of what I've seen. I think, Hub, there's been a little bit of frustration, but nothing that concerns me too much. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. And the only thing I would add, Sean, is that Caleb is the leader of this team. He's got these other veterans who are really good NFL players, you know, in DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and even, you know, certainly Cole Kmet and even Roma Dunze now. And yet they have been good about leaning towards Caleb more than expecting Caleb to lean towards them. They want him to be the leader. They know that's what he was brought in for. And so I've seen some, on some days I'll look at a conversation I'm watching, or I'll see one of them respond, and I'll wonder if they're really happy with each other. But what I know, because I've asked them the question, They don't care. They just want to win games, and they do believe in Caleb Williams as a talent. That I can tell you from being there every day. They believe they've got their quarterback now, and they want to do what they can to help him in any way that they can. And he is very good about going to these guys, these veterans, and listening to them and finding out what they think should happen. So I think the communication is good. As near as I can tell from observing, the relationships are good. But you're absolutely right. He's the kid, and they brought in all the star talent. Now they're trying to figure out how to work with each other.
Yeah, that's good to hear, because he's learning as he goes. And I think if the fan base keeps that in mind, he's not a finished product. You know, this is his first time playing quarterback in National Football League. This is his first time. If he's the leader, I never want the rookie quarterback to be the leader of my team. Like, I feel like we got to have some accomplished old lineman or older guy that's been around, that's gone through things. I don't want the rookie to make unnecessary mistakes, if that makes sense. Because he hadn't been in this situation before. So, But it's good to hear that they're embracing him. I'm pulling for him. I think Chicago's going to learn a lot about who they really are, because I do think some of their success has come against some of the catfish of the league this year. And I think the intensity level and the level of competition is going to increase significantly as we get down the stretch. And that's where you kind of start to see all those relationships really mired in loyalty and longstanding, or are they mired in results?
Well, Sean,
so that'll be something to watch.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. I do think, though, that there's a good chance that in 2 or 3 weeks, Keenan Allen could become the leader of this team. I think him missing those 3 or 4 weeks really cost them in a lot of ways. And you saw how the offense turned around when he came back. He is the veteran talent. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but he's certainly a Pro Bowler. You know, Cole Kmet would be the other guy, but Cole is kind of a quiet guy. He's shown leadership ability, but he doesn't want to be the number one player. But I would keep an eye on Keenan Allen starting to take this team over the next couple of weeks.
You know what's interesting, and you know, I don't necessarily like to live in the past, but I'm a person that looks at offseason moves, and then I revisit them during the season. And would you say that gaining Keenan Allen helped the offense more than if they would have kept Darnell Mooney, who seems to be excelling in Atlanta?
I think it's a valid question for, you know, it's obviously a two to tango situation. Darnell Mooney seemed to get to a point last season where whatever level of frustration, he was always super professional, and he went through a season-ending injury a couple of years back. And then last year, for whatever reason, he and Justin Fields just couldn't connect. They were so close, and then DJ Moore comes in, and last season, it's like Justin Fields would miss Darnell Mooney when he was open. Or then when he'd hit Darnell Mooney between the numbers, Mooney would drop the ball. Something just wasn't right. Something was off with their connection last year. So I do think it suits Darnell Mooney to have moved on from the Bears, and he's flourishing, like you mentioned, which is good for him. So Keenan Allen come in with a fresh veteran presence on still an impressionable roster. I think both sides probably benefit from it, because it wasn't working with Mooney last season. He was never, you know, outwardly showing frustration or expressing, you know, any difficulty with any of it, but he didn't play well, and Fields was still struggling and all those things from last season. So I think that, you know, that separation kind of worked for both sides there. I do, before we appreciate you being generous with your time, I want to ask you one more thing before we let you run, Sean, because there was that play on the goal line where the Bears have an opportunity late in the fourth quarter to take a lead. Very fortunately, their defense comes up with the stop. Their offense got another crack at it where they did take the lead. But that goal line attempted handoff to the backup center in their goal line package. He's been in there. He's been a good lead blocker at times. They've scored some goal-to-go touchdowns with him as a blocker. But to turn around and hand it to your backup center when your offense has been struggling the entire game, you're late in the fourth quarter, and that was the play they went to. Handoff goes awry at the mesh point. They fumble it away to the Commanders. Have you ever been in a scenario as a quarterback? Not only, I'm sure you've questioned a play call before, but how much autonomy have you felt where you just flat out said, no, I'm not running that? Like, what do you think the expectation could be in a moment like that where what seems to be a pretty wild play call comes in and then the result ends up being terrible?
I like the thought process. I like the level of creativity. I didn't like the situation. And kind of here's what I'm talking about. We talked about the remaining schedule and how difficult and tough it is, right? So when I was a coordinator, I would always ask myself, what can I live with? Like when I'm designing the red zone package and the 10 plus and the 5 plus package. What can I live with if this doesn't work? And I always came back to this. If I design something for our best options, our best players, our most talented guys, and for whatever reason the defense does their job, I can live with that. But I don't want to get back into the locker room. I don't want to get on the plane, bus, however it was away game, home game, and be like, damn, I screwed this up because I tried to get too cute and get a ball to the center. So that's always – it's a different strokes, different folks, but that's how I always approached it. What can I live with?
Sean King has played the game at the highest of levels. Sean King has coached the game at the major college level. You hear him all over Fox Sports Radio these days as well. Appreciate you being generous with your time, Sean. Thanks a lot, man.
Go Hawkeyes. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Sean. Right. Take care.
Go Hawks. He's the pride of the Tulane Green Wave as well. I'm actually going to be in New Orleans in a few weeks where I call the Bayou Classic down there every year for NBC. That's Sean's old stomping grounds from college, too. So I look forward to doing that every year. But Sean was so good. We're late for a timeout. We'll get out of the way for a moment here. We'll come back. And I do want to set up the topic we were talking about. Now, I'm pretty sure we've gotten some voicemails by this point as well. The way we set it up earlier, because the Odyssey app now has this feature where when you go to the 670 The Score page within the Odyssey app, there's the Listen Live tab in it. Just to the right of that tab is a microphone-shaped icon. You click on that and you can leave up to a 60-second message, a voicemail, that we can play here on the air. So you got time to do that throughout the rest of the evening. We are here with you until 9 o'clock. Here's Hub Arkish. I am Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more Anthony Herron and Hub Arkish on Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the free Odyssey app.
So Tyler Butterball is just giddy about some of these voicemails that are coming in. We will get to those in short order. Make sure you download the Odyssey app. Go to the Listen Live tab within the 670 The Score page in the Odyssey app. And just next to that Listen Live tab, it's a little circular button shaped like a microphone. You click on that, you leave up to a 60-second voicemail message. And what we want you to focus on tonight is to compare that game between the Bears and the Commanders, the way things went down, with your favorite scary movie. So we'll play some of those over the course of the next hour and a half that we are here with you. I'm Anthony Herron. He is Hub Arkish. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's go back out to the hotline, though. I see Sam is out there in Skokie. Want to talk about what's happening with this Bears offense specific to the backfield. Sam, what's up?
Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time caller. Just calling in because, you know, I'm just, you know, frustrated as a Bears fan when I'm not mad at Kramer to give him the ball. I'm not even mad that he fumbled the ball. I'm mad that, you know, like, you got Herbert just wasting away on the bench. I think they put him on inactive. It's like he can get a yard. You know, it's like in those short situations, it's like, why do you got to go so fancy when you have – you have a potential answer on the line, you know, like on the bench, like throw him in a rotation. Like, you know, our offensive line's weak. We know it's weak, but, you know, he's a big enough, strong enough guy where he can get a yard. And I swear to God, if they don't draft all offensive linemen next year, I'm just going to give up as a Bears fan. Because it's so frustrating to see, you know, it's like we know what they need. And, like, Pace has to see what we need. And it's like, do whatever you got to do to give him a line, because if you give Caleb a line, I think he's just going to shine. And, you know, just wondering what you guys think.
I appreciate the call, Sam. That's Sam out there in Skokie. And, you know, the running back position, it's interesting, Hub, in my opinion, because they paid DeAndre Swift, brought him in, and he's been very productive here over the past month. He's a really talented ball carrier and pass receiver. And so they're accentuating his skills here lately, and he's showing up big. Beyond that, Roschon Johnson is an unproven commodity. And, you know, I think the guy who hasn't been used much usually becomes very popular, whether that's a backup quarterback or backup running back. I think, you know, we'll see with Roschon, but he certainly runs hard. And that feels good to watch him run hard. Khalil Herbert, he's had some big games in the NFL. He's had some rushing success. He just doesn't seem to be a part of the current offense's plans right now for whatever reason. But I think to, you know, the caller, Sam's point, the goal line play, yeah, I honestly have a bigger issue with that play, the trying to hand the ball to Doug Kramer, than the speed option from the Colts game. I didn't love that play call either, don't get me wrong. But this one, I took bigger issue with there, because you've had a run game that has found success here as of late.
You know, the bottom line is that the Bears' offensive line is not as bad or lacking in talent as a lot of people seem to think it is. It's not good. I'm not pretending it is, and they do need to improve it. But they have done a lot to try and improve it the last couple of years. They have two very young tackles who were playing well. They've started to struggle a little on the right side the last couple of weeks, which has been surprising to me. But you know, at the end of the day, they haven't had the same five starters once yet this year. They've had injuries at various positions. Fortunately, nothing serious, but a lot of problems. And I think they're still trying to get the same five guys on the field together for a couple weeks and see what they can do. And we were starting to see some of that in those last three games until last weekend. So I think you still want to add more talent. There's no question about that. But it's not a complete rebuild of the offensive line. It's just getting them healthy and adding one or two more pieces or developing, you know, you get your third-round draft choice on the field out of need on Sunday, and he's terrible because he's a third-round draft choice playing in his first NFL game. But, you know, they think that they may have something there to compete at those tackle positions. And you're right, though. They will add more talent this offseason. They won't draft nothing but you know, offensive linemen. But they do need to add a few more pieces.
And Karan Amagaji is a guy who, you know, out of Yale, so obviously a highly intelligent guy, seems to be a guy in a similar fashion, even though he was drafted higher than Braxton Jones was, but a guy with a lot of traits that you like, but you want to see him continue to develop physically. And Amagaji didn't have a preseason to really, you know, even get the NFL figured out. Then he's hurt for the preseason for the most part, and he's hurt throughout the initial portion of the regular season. And now he's just been trying to work himself into shape in practice. So it is, you know, I don't know. Maybe the guy will never be a good NFL player, but I wouldn't say based off of him just getting his first couple of series of action, aside from a couple of special teams reps in the prior game, there's a lot of work for him to do that he just hasn't had the chance to do to try and prepare for success in the NFL. But, you know, that's life in the big city. That's the position the Bears are in right now, because they did need another tackle. He's the guy they've expended the draft capital on. Braxton Jones goes down, and as opposed to having Nate Davis active, who they seem rather perturbed with for a variety of reasons, Nate Davis is inactive, so Matt Pryor stays at guard. Here comes Bill Murray, then Bill Murray gets banged up. Here comes Doug Kramer. Karan Amagaji goes out to left tackle, and it's like sharks smelling blood in the water when they see that, when they see a guy getting his first extended action in the game. So that they were teeing off as much as they could on Amagaji.
Well, and Anthony, I want to be fair to the kid, because let's be honest about this. Yeah, he started slow, but he made two blocks on the DeAndre Swift touchdown
run.
It touchdown doesn't happen if he doesn't make those two blocks. He made, one of them was a really nice block, and he does know how to do that, you know, and he's a rookie playing in the NFL. It takes time. You know, we know nothing about him yet. I'm not writing him off because he started being run out onto the field, not even expecting to play with an injury. So, you know, let's wait before we evaluate him too much.
Right. And so we'll see. I'm confident that Sam and Skogie, that his concerns about how the offensive line has been resourced, I feel pretty confident the Bears are going to continue to put more resources into the O-line this offseason. Let's get another caller in here before we take another timeout, though. David is in Bloomington with some concerns about how the Bears have gone about using their timeouts. What's up, David?
What's up, Anthony? Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate the show. And, Hub, nice to hear you back after some health concerns.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate you
being back on the air.
Thank you.
Followed you both for a while. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, you had three timeouts left, and maybe you should have taken one. Defense had been really working hard, and, you know, you should have taken a timeout to regroup. You got Caleb going up and down the sidelines telling the D-backs to get up. You know, maybe that's where, as a leadership standpoint, you say, take a timeout. Let's regroup here. Hey, you got 85 if they do a Hail Mary. You got this guy. You got this guy. So I guess just wanted your guys' opinion on that and the use of the timeouts in the game. Thanks for taking my call.
Anthony, I can go real quick on that one because I didn't have a problem. You know, the bottom line is, in that situation, the Commanders don't have any timeouts. There's 6 seconds left on the clock. You call a timeout there, it's a bigger advantage to the Commanders than it is to you. You knew what you wanted to do. You've been practicing the Hail Mary, you know, your whole life. You have a plan. You weren't going to put in a new system, you know. So on that particular call, these people complaining about not calling it was the. I'm glad they didn't call a timeout. I think it would have been more of an advantage for the other team than it would have been for them.
I think, and obviously this portion of it ends up feeling results based as well. And I try not to be results based in my critique of these things. And all of it ends up going on Matt Eberflus's resume, where, you know, you look at the game management aspect of it. So even just specifically this season, with some moments where challenges take place earlier in the year where it felt obvious that, you know, that the call wasn't going to be overturned, so you're wasting timeouts there. Now you have a couple of moments here between the London game and this game against the Commanders where it's like, oh, you could have challenged that, and now it feels like maybe you're apprehensive because you've lost timeouts doing that. And so now I think all this begins to compile a little bit with the perception of whether or not Matt Eberflus just sort of has command of game situations. You can go back to last season where big leads against Denver and Detroit, and clock management concerns kind of come into that, where you're losing big leads against some of those teams. So it's all a part of the evaluation of Matt Eberflus. And within this particular season, I do think that in either scenario, with either side of it, the Commanders not having a timeout, they complete that 13-yard pass. Now they get into, you know, the range where you can legitimately throw a Hail Mary. I think there's a more than representative case to make and say that, especially we're hearing that players like Jalen Johnson felt a bit rushed and they're trying to redirect traffic, and Tremaine Edmonds is here and there. And, you know, it's one of those things, yes, you practice it, but you also have multiple starters out in the defensive secondary as well. So, you know, if Flus calls the timeout and they still catch the Hail Mary, then he probably gets ripped for that. But I do think that, yeah, I don't have an issue with the thought that, yeah, timeout would have been something that felt suitable, because apparently they weren't necessarily on the same page. But, you know, there's no perfect answer to it, because the result ended up being what it was. Let's take a timeout, though. We see the phone lines are still lighting up here, but also we got some voicemails coming in with the topic that we were addressing earlier. We're two nights away from Halloween, and with All Hallows Eve on the go, we wanted to make sure we gave you an opportunity to utilize the voicemail function in the Odyssey app, comparing that Bears game, the results of the Bears against the Commanders, to some of your favorite scary movies. We'll take a timeout, come back, listen to some of these voicemails. Hub and I will react on the other side of this timeout. I'm Anthony Heron. He is Hub Arkish. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let's celebrate. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Oh, doesn't get much better than Thriller. It's kind of like how Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You just kind of, you know, rears its head every December. You get past Thanksgiving and then suddenly it's just Mariah Carey all over the place. Now, I can listen to Thriller 12 months out of the year, but we know when you get to the month of October, and especially to the final week of October, it's where you're going to hear Thriller just wall to wall. Everywhere you go, folks are going to be playing the song Thriller. And I'm not mad at him for doing that. I'm Anthony Heron, my guy, the great Hub Arkish. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We asked for voicemails in the Odyssey app, and you have been delivering. Tyler Butterball, the ones and twos for us throughout the evening here. He has been listening to said voicemails, taking them in, ingesting them through the Odyssey app system, and now he's got some that we can play back. Let's start with the one from James out in Frankfurt, who's got a comp with one of the all-time great horror movies between that and what we saw from the Bears against the Commanders.
Original Exorcist, because old coach Henry Dietz from the Washington Redskins possessed Tyreek Stevenson's body for the last freaking 2 seconds of that game and caused that deflection on purpose. Have a good night, Big Ant and Hub.
James, you have a great night, too. Appreciate that. The Exorcist, I think that's an interesting spin on it, because maybe that's all that happened. For some reason, unbeknownst to us, apparently unbeknownst to Tyreek Stevenson, he decides to look to the stands, start waving at Bears fans, interacting with Commanders fans. The ball gets snapped. He's still looking at the stands. It's inexplicable. It is unexplainable. I have no idea what possessed him in that moment. Everyone has been posing that question. What possessed Tyreek Stevenson in that moment? I think James from Frankfurt might be onto something there. Maybe it was some sort of demon spirit that took over for just a few moments, and then he got an exorcism, snapped out of it, and went and tried to knock the ball down. I don't know. Do you recall what your initial reaction was, Hub? Not only when you saw that moment, but how similar was your reaction in seeing Tyreek Stevenson to the first time you watched The Exorcist?
Well, I just didn't understand what Stevenson was doing. You know, I mean, I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, Tyreek, the game's not over yet. You know? And then he takes off, and he did get to the backfield in time to do his job, but then he didn't do his job. You know, and so it's totally on him. He's already acknowledged that. I think we already know that now that we know what was called or what he was supposed to be doing. But I'm sure that even the coaches are trying to figure out what he was thinking because, you know, he's acting like the game is over. You know, like the ball isn't going to be snapped. And he just kind of lost it for a minute there, and that's what he said, and that's what happened. He just lost it for a minute and was too busy celebrating. And let's add to that. You know, I just said celebrating. The entire roster had to be thinking, how did we get the lead? How are we winning this game?
Right.
You know, how are we only 6 seconds away from winning? I think that, you know, you have to be able to handle that. But I think that was part of the problem, is that they didn't even believe what was going on because they really weren't in the game until a couple minutes earlier.
Yeah, I mean, credit to the Bears defense for holding that magnificent offense to field goal after field goal after field goal. And frankly, credit to the Commanders for the key drop pass here or there, key penalty here or there that kind of takes them out of range. And, you know, field goals are happening instead of touchdowns, and the Bears just find themselves continuing in the game. So credit to the defense. Commanders certainly helped them out with that a bit as well. But I like that. It's a strong start comparing Tyreek Stevenson's, let's call it lapse of judgment, to being taken over, as was the case in The Exorcist. Let's get another one in here. Mike from Western Springs compares what happened in the game to the Halloween classic, Halloween.
What's up, guys? I think the loss against Washington was similar to the movie Halloween, the original Halloween. The Bears were Jamie Lee Curtis, and the Commanders were Michael Myers. You think at the end, when Jamie Lee Curtis pushes him out over the window, he's dead on the lawn. Then at the last second, she goes out and looks, and he's gone.
That's great. That's a good one, Mike. I like that. They thought they had him down because, honestly, the Bears for a minute were kind of Michael Myers. You know, if we're going to really just play this scenario out from the movie, who's the one that wouldn't die in the game? It seemed like for a moment it was actually the Bears who could have been left for their demise for a while. And the next thing you know, here they are. They've come back to life. It just seems like they've found themselves back in the game. They even take the lead late, to the point you were making a moment ago, Hub. And then here they are. The Commanders are the ones who actually, you know, could not be snuffed out by the Bears. I like that kind of Mike from Western Springs comparing the results of the game, the Bears trying to snuff out the Commanders with the film Halloween. I don't know. I like that one. I like The Exorcist, but I kind of like Mike from Western Springs comparing it with Halloween even more.
I like them both. they're doing it. It was a good idea, Anthony, and they're doing a good job so far.
Yeah, so far, so good. I don't know. For me, because I love horror films so much and I'm pretty passionate about them, especially when they've got a little plot twist at the end, we haven't necessarily gotten one yet from one of these voicemails with someone who kind of works one of the plot twist type of endings into. So we'll come back around to some voicemails a little bit later in the show, and we got some we haven't played yet. Feel free to continue out there in the Odyssey app, leaving the voicemails with that microphone function that's in there in the Odyssey app. We'll see if we make time in the final hour to come back around to some of those. But Herb Howard, just like Hub Arcus, spends a lot of time up at Hallis Hall, taking in what's been going on with the Bears, the reactions from the players, the reactions from the coaches, and getting to be inquisitive with one Matt Eberflus, who will be addressing the assembled media again tomorrow. Let's take a time out, come back at the top of our third hour. Herb Howard from the Bigs will be with us. I'm Anthony Herron. The great Hub Arcus is alongside. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.